graduated from Hopkins Med School in 2004 and stayed to do residency and fellowship.
And I'm Elizabeth Tracy. Dan, you have a story that I think illustrates something really great about patient and family-centered care. It's looking at a side of patient care that's not often looked at least I don't think it is. Will you please tell me some more about it?
I think as a physician in training, there's certain cases that stick with you. The case of Mrs. D was one of those cases. So anybody who's gone through medical training has unfortunately probably been to an unnecessary or at least a unnecessarily traumatic code situation in a hospital. We all come away from those feeling like more should have been done or could have been done to prevent somebody who's very sick, usually, from having a very kind of violent chest compression demise, when that outcome may have been inevitable, regardless of the heroic measures thrown at somebody in the last minutes or seconds of life. The fear of that scenario motivates many of us, I think, admirably, to want to have proactive discussions with patients and with families about defining goals of care and defining just where people want the line drawn. One of the things, though, that became evident for me, particularly in the case of Mrs. D, is that the pendulum can sometimes swing too far in the other direction. So let me tell you a little bit about who Mrs. D was and is, in fact. She is a 99-year-old woman, a young 99, I should say, who's born and raised and lived her whole life in Baltimore. And she and I met in the emergency room. I think it was about a week before her 100th birthday, as a matter of fact. A petite African-American woman, seemingly composed of skin, bone, muscle, and not a perceptible ounce of fat, which may have been part of her secret to longevity. She was on a stretcher, hooked up to all kinds of monitors, and had a big oxygen mask covering most of her small face. Her three kids, who are all in their 70s, by the way, sitting right there next to her. She actually got the first word in. "Sonny, my hearing's not too good. Talking to my left ear, will ya?" And then she winked at me. Long story short, she was an elderly woman, but who lived admirably independently, doing housework and gardening and paying her bills and really of sound mind. What had landed her in the emergency room was a fall she had taken at home on the stairs, which her family seemed to connect with worsening shortness of breath. This fall, unfortunately, had caused her to break her hip. It was clear that to fix the hip, to walk again, that she would need surgery. So the reason I was involved and my team was involved was because before the orthopedist could really responsibly operate, we needed to figure out her breathing issues. She was requiring a lot of oxygen, and we sort of had to answer the question as to why this was and what could be done about it to try to get her as ready and as safe as possible for the operating room. So we brought her to our unit, and it became pretty clear that she was in congestive heart failure and had an overload of fluid in many places in her body, including her lungs, which was causing her to have more labored breathing. So we began treating her for quote-unquote congestive heart failure, and we started to make progress. And then we hit a snag, as we sometimes do. One of her lungs went down. It collapsed under the pressure of a lot of fluid, and that caused her to get even sicker fairly quickly. In those series of moments, we were facing a pretty difficult decision, which was, do we stabilize her by hooking her up to a breathing machine, which is what we can do in an ICU, but is invasive and really kind of advanced life support, or do we not? In the midst of this decision-making, it became known that long ago, Mrs. D had told her kids that she would not want to be dependent on machines to sustain her life in the long term. And in this situation, her family was relying on us to do whatever we thought was right. And so my resident at the time, in fairly clear terms, stated that we would not be intubating, saying that she's 99 years old, after all. He sort of paused after saying this, feeling, I think, that it constituted a sufficient argument, and I think sensing soon that I was not really persuaded by his restatement of her age, he continued by saying, "It's cruel to hook her up to a vent. I'd never want this for my grandmother. We're going to focus on making her comfortable." All of which is a reasonable line of thinking, I think, with noble origins, but frankly, his stated focus on Mrs. D's comfort discomforted me. My response, in the heat of battle, if you will, was, look, the ventilator is meant as a temporary tool. She's a tool to turn her around. Yes, she's 99, but she gardened yesterday. It's meant to raise the bigger point that not everybody is defined by a number or an age. We'll respect her wish to not be on machines long term, but this is meant as a short-term attempt to help. Because the decision needed to be made, I ordered Mrs. T's intubation, and it didn't feel like I had succeeded. I felt a failure to express myself, a failure to really persuade a colleague that I respect. But I did feel I was right, and I felt like we needed to do something right then and there. So I sort of came away from all of this humbled and I think more appreciative of the complexity that goes into decisions like this. There's something that's unquestionably admirable about avoiding invasive measures in somebody who's very sick or very end stage in terms of their life. We've been taught and trained to address those issues proactively. But I think the danger is when those good intentions morph potentially into a reflex rather than reflection.